AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. On this Memorial Day, commemorations across the country, including one at Veterans Memorial Park in Sanford, Florida, where hundreds honored lost service men and women, including this 13-year-old.
I think it'll, like, help us to be less selfish and to just realize that we don't deserve all of these things. People died so that we're able to have them.
The death toll has risen to 22 after powerful storms swept over the central and southern U.S. this weekend. The next phase of Donald Trump's hush money trial closing arguments, which begin tomorrow. A 26-year-old Massachusetts man who stabbed six people, including four girls, in a movie theater in separate attacks, will be arraigned tomorrow. He was arrested Saturday night. One half of the NBA playoffs is decided. The Boston Celtics wrapped up the Eastern Conference Finals tonight, beating the Indiana Pacers in Game 4, 105-102. Next up tomorrow, Dallas and Minnesota battling for the Western Conference title. This is ABC News. Police are searching for three male suspects, one of whom allegedly shot and killed 37-year-old soap star Johnny Wachter, who plays Brando Corbin on ABC's General Hospital.
Police in Los Angeles are searching for his killer after the actor was fatally shot early Saturday morning. Wachter's mother says he was leaving a bartending shift downtown with a female coworker when he saw someone working on his car. She says her son asked if he was getting towed. According to police, the suspects who got away were trying to steal the car's catalytic converter. Wachter was rushed to the hospital where he died.
ABC's Zareen Shaw. 14-time French Open champion Rafael Nadal lost in the first round today at Roland Garros. This could well be his last time at the Grand Slam tournament. The 37-year-old has been dealing with hip and abdominal injuries for over a year. The house in Winnetka, Illinois, made famous by the iconic movie Home Alone, can now be yours, selling for $5.25 million. Dave Packer, ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
One of the most prolific columnists in the Midwest. Mr. James Causey, one of your columns, you mentioned that you got into the news because of the news quiz.
Yes. I would like to be the first person picked. And so.
Yes. Getting picked first for the news quiz teams.
We need to bring that back, actually. I need to talk to my paper about bringing that back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Watch out!
You got me!
The galaxy is safe once again.
In the pretend universe, kids play with pretend guns. In the real world, it's up to us to make sure they don't get their hands on a real gun. If you have a gun in the house, keep it locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by End Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The National Weather Service is in Rock County to survey severe weather damage from Sunday. The damage is to large trees, which could have been done by tornadoes. The Weather Service investigation will focus on Janesville and Milton. Tornadoes may have also touched down in Whitewater and Fort Atkinson Sunday. A lot of people are on their way home from the busiest Memorial Day weekend for travel since the pandemic. 3.5 million Americans flew somewhere.
Last year, the cancellation rate was at a 10-year low. This year, so far, it's actually even better than last year, but we want to make sure that it stays that way. We're pressing the airlines to do their part.
U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg speaking with WISN-TV's Up Front. This is Civic Media News.
The Brewers beat the Cubs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where the Brewers put together a late-inning rally to beat Chicago 5-1 in front of over 41,000 fans at American Family Field. The play of the day, bottom of the eighth, Willie Adames at the plate, Brian Anderson with the call. Wisconsin Bally Sports.
Wisniewski deals, Adames center field, Bellinger on the run, he looks up, goodbye! A three-run blast, Willie Adames! 4-0 Brewers.
Adames on taking a swing with three balls and no strikes.
Well, I don't really like to swing 3-0, but today it's just the right opportunity, the right moment, and the right situation. I think today we got the results we wanted.
Meanwhile, the Cubs' offensive drought continues. Manager Craig Counsell.
We talked about margin. You're in this low run scoring environment that you know, a couple of weeks now.
From American Family Field with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Evening showers and storms, then partly cloudy in upper 40s overnight. Some sun to start tomorrow, then some afternoon showers once again. Highs in the mid-60s. Sunny and around 70 Wednesday. Thursday highs warm to the low 70s. Chance of rain as well. Right now it's 53.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matinee on Air.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. On the line with us is Ali Velshi, the host of MSNBC's Velshi, the author of a new book, Small Acts of Courage, A Legacy of Endurance and the Fight for Democracy. Ali, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you with us.
It's great to be with you. It's been too long. Thank you for having me back.
I agree. Thank you. Let's just go through the book. I found this to be just an extraordinary, touching, brilliant, informative. I mean, you know, where you get into like, you know, this sort of in the middle of the book, getting into some of these issues like, you know, the Francophone culture in Canada and is this racist? And let's just start at the beginning here.
I knew you'd like it because you like to sort of see contemporary events in the context of history, so I figured you'd appreciate that.
I love this book, and I encourage everybody to. I mean, this is an inspiring book as well as it's just marvelous. You start the book talking about getting shot, and you said that it led to an epiphany, which in turn led to this book. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I was in Minneapolis. It was after the killing of George Floyd. You know, it was the early days right after that where the video was all out there. Everybody knew what had happened. And yet, initially, the cops were not charged with anything. There was a remarkable frustration. There were demonstrations in Minneapolis. And on the Saturday night after he had been killed, it had been Monday in which he had been killed. On Saturday night, I was walking with a group of, I don't know if you want to call them protesters. They were marchers. They were ralliers. They were walking. It was entirely peaceful. They were singing songs. And suddenly the police got involved and closed off an intersection and started firing rubber bullets and gas canisters, tear gas canisters and flashbangs. And there was no provocation for this at all. And as we were covering it, you know, as the tear gas came out, the crowd pushed back. So I'm now closest to the police. And they could see us. We had cameras. We were there. In theory, they should have been looking through a scope. The whole point of a rubber bullet is it hits the ground, not you. And I got hit while live on TV. And it occurred to me in that moment, Tom, that, you know, 50 years earlier than that, my parents had struggled getting from, you know, my grandparents, great-grandparents went from India to South Africa, and they really tried to fight racism in South Africa, which became apartheid. And they went to Kenya where, you know, they wanted to be part of a full society. And they finally made it to Canada. And I had made it to the United States. And I thought to myself, at least the fight for the basics about democracy and equality are over for us. And that's not true. And it was in that moment I realized I've had a very privileged upbringing. There are a lot of things wrong with our society, and we as journalists have to play a substantial role in fixing those wrongs.
Yeah, amen. I saw you on TV when you were shot. I was watching. I remember it well. From there, you get now stepping back into your family's history. You talk about between 1830 and 1870, nearly 2 million workers left. This is after Britain basically, you know, screwed up India, yeah. Left the country in search of better prospects. That was the big bang, you write. The Indian diaspora was born. And that led to your grandfather ultimately ending up in Mahatma Gandhi's ashram. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, my family had gone from Gujarat, and when you were leaving, if you were leaving Gujarat in the 1800s, you probably went from the port of Bombay, and then you went on the ships that went from Bombay, and many of those went to Africa. Some went to the West Indies, but typically they weren't going to Europe and America. So my family ended up in South Africa. Small business people. When I say small, I mean they had push carts and wagons out of which they would sell vegetables and things like that. But my great-grandfather made it into a bit of a business, you know, where they had a storefront and things like that. And as a businessman, he needed an accountant. He's Gujarati. Gandhi was in South Africa. He was a lawyer. He was Gujarati, too. They happened to share the same accountant. The accountant introduces them, and my great-grandfather and Gandhi become friends. Gandhi lives in Johannesburg. My great-grandfather lives in Pretoria. Gandhi would have to come to Pretoria to negotiate with the government, you know, through all his agitations. And he'd stay with my great-grandfather. And one day they're sitting around, and he says to my great-grandfather, you know, people don't seem to have the spine, the courage to fight this racial injustice in this country because they're fearful it'll cost them something. And that was very true of Indians in many places in the diaspora, in that they were there, they kind of wanted to keep their heads low. Gandhi wanted to form an ashram or a commune to train people to go to prison, basically. And he asked my great-grandfather, can you give me your son, 7 years old at the time, this is the man who would become my grandfather, as my youngest student. And my great-grandfather was thinking to himself, we're Muslims. You're a Hindu. How can I send my son in his formative years to be in a Hindu ashram? And Gandhi says, I will read your religion. I will learn it to teach it to him. And Gandhi not only read Islam, he read Judaism, he read Christianity, and of course Hinduism. And that became part of his pluralistic view of the world. But my grandfather became the youngest of 70 inmates, if you will, on this commune who grew up self-sufficient, no hot water, no meat. You grew all of the food you ate. And the point was to be ready to fight injustice and go to prison if you have to.
Yeah. The Tolstoy Farm, as I recall, it was called.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Remarkable. So from there, you talk about moving from South Africa to Kenya to Canada. And I want to get back to Kenya in a moment, but you say as a kid, this is on page 70, as a kid, I never understood it. If I'm being honest, you're talking about your father here, being his son sometimes bordered on the unpleasant. We didn't have any leisure activities. It was always work, politics, volunteering, that sort of thing. I grew up thinking that life was not fun, although it's not to say that our lives are miserable. This seems kind of consistent with the immigrant experience as I've learned about. My grandfather was a Norwegian immigrant to the United States in 1917. Came and lived in Chicago, and he and his three brothers started a furniture building, you know, fine furniture store. They were craftsmen. And I certainly saw that in my grandfather. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I write about it that way because as a kid, comparing yourself to other kids for whom that ethos didn't exist because it didn't need to exist. They were living in Canada. There was no particular challenge to doing so. In my family, they were on this decades-long search for democracy, equality, full participation in society. So all of their work was going to go into that. It was going into building civil society because as people who grew up in South Africa who could not vote by virtue of the color of their skin, they were going to take every possible opportunity they could to be involved. So they would volunteer for organizations. They went to all the functions of all the political parties. There were three major political parties at the time to try and figure out where they felt most at home. They ended up learning that they were liberals in Canada, which is how it was for most immigrants through that generation. But it wasn't leisure and it wasn't fun. And it's not that I think my parents wouldn't have enjoyed leisure or fun, but they were on a mission. They had to leave their home country. They had gone to another country to make a go of it, and they weren't able to do so. So Canada was the last stop. It had to work for them. And that meant we were not going to have a carefree upbringing. We were going to work. We were going to talk. We were going to talk about the news. We were going to watch the news. We were going to debate issues. And we were going to come to conclusions as a family. And then we were going to exercise our civic responsibilities, the least of which was voting. I mean, we worked in every election I could remember since I was a little kid. But the point is, voting was the price of admission. It was everything else that mattered.
Yeah, I get it. It was that way with my father and grandfather as well. Moving along to page 97, the Pretoria Bakers called up your dad and asked him to stop. The bread war dragged on and on. At that point in July 1960, my father, mother, and grandparents decided to leave. We're talking about now leaving South Africa and going to Nairobi, Kenya. Tell us about that.
My dad had two sisters who had married people who were from Kenya. So we had some footing there. It was also a very, very big center for Indians diasporically. So we knew people there. My parents could see the writing on the wall because my grandfather and my father and his brother were running this family bakery, which had become a very big operation. It was a commercial bakery. They baked 4,000 loaves of bread an hour and, of course, had attracted the ire of the government because they were taking the money from that bakery and they were financing anti-apartheid activities. They were doing the kinds of things to, you know, to make society a better place. So ultimately, the government came in and you know, their fellow bakers sort of forced them out of business. The government came in, bulldozed the bakery. This was 1961. My dad and my grandfather were standing together watching the bakery come down, this bakery they had built. My dad said it was the only time he ever saw his father cry. And strangely, my 58-year-old grandfather was dead a week later of a heart attack. My father thinks it's heartbreak as much as it was heart attack, but he died of a heart attack. My parents then decided, let's get out of here. So they moved to Kenya, pre-independence Kenya. It was a colonial country. And one day, Tom, you and I can talk about all the great things colonialism did for the world. It kind of wrecked every country it ever went into.
Yep.
But Kenya was on the verge of throwing off the yoke of colonialism, and they wanted to be in a free country. So even when they got there, it was a colonial country, but it was not like South Africa. It didn't have that Byzantine set of racist rules that was apartheid. People could walk on the same sidewalks. Everybody went to the same movie theater. It was racist. There's no question. But it was better than South Africa. They were hoping that was going to be their future. It was ultimately where I was born.
Yeah. Now, moving along, the chapter about splinters and asses, I have to be careful. We're on commercial radio. My parents had never embraced South Africa, art and culture, you write on page 99, because they'd been told under threat of force that it wasn't theirs. But then on page 118, you talk about in South Africa, my parents had been citizens, albeit second class. Now Kenya offered them true citizenship. I think you just mentioned that. But then you got into Ismaili. Muslims, yeah. This is a word I was unfamiliar with, and I learned about.
Okay.
So tell me about the type of Islam. You're a member of a very, very small minority group within a very
yes.
large religion.
Yeah, it's probably tens of millions around the world, but in the context of Islam, it's tiny. Some Muslims think of Ismailis as heretics, but that's how religion goes, right? People don't necessarily. The ones closest to you are the ones most troublesome. It is a sect of Islam that embraces modernity and pluralism and democracy and sort of encourages people to be civil actors, right? Encourages people to build the countries in which they live, and as a result, it has a remarkably robust infrastructure within the community. So you can exist as in Smiley, and it'll take care of your births and your deaths and your financial counseling and your language training and your job training and your marriage counseling if you need it. So that's the world in which they grew up. And what typically happens with Ismailis around the world is you will see them being the people who hold office or work in the bureaucracies or find themselves into sort of areas of employment that are a little less than traditional because they are born organizers within the community and then without as well. So that is what primed my family and so many others, by the way, who came to the Western world and moved into the democratic world to sort of not have a very long transition period, to be able to get in here and say, I'm here, where do I sign up? What do I have to do to be full participants? And ultimately, by the time they got to Canada, what that led to...
Allie, forgive the interruption. Can you hang on for another 10 minutes?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, great. We're going to have to take a quick break here. We'll be right back. It's 18 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Allie Velshi about his new book, Small Acts of Courage.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back with Allie Velshi, MSNBC's Allie Velshi, and his new book, The Small Acts of Courage, A Legacy of Endurance and the Fight for Democracy.
One out of two Americans thinks their life is worthy of a book. Here's another startling stat. You may be one of the 15% of people who bothered to start your book and one of the 6% that got halfway through it, but your gem of an idea likely died. Or did it? Some published authors are making significant money, so join the ranks of the successful people that finish their books with help from Dorrance Publishing. Call right now, and our experienced editors and writers will explain to you what it's going to take to get your book completely written, published, and then taken to market to sell it. It's a free consultation, so call right now. Find out how much time and money it takes to finally get that book idea of yours published. Make your dreams happen. Call Dorrance Publishing right now.
800-640-6298. 800-640-6298. 800-640-6298. That's 800-640-6298.
Your forecast for you and your community. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. We love Wisconsin weather and tracking it to keep you updated whenever it changes. Listen for our weather-ready stories so you're always prepared on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Earl Ingram.
Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. You say what?
I've been marching since I was 17. I'm 74. And women need to get out. You need to vote because you don't want to go back to 1950 where you weren't allowed a credit card, where you weren't allowed to purchase a car or a home. These are things that are at stake.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
My mom has taken up going to the park to practice yoga.
My dad's going to a club, but not a book club, a salsa club.
Finding new hobbies comes with age.
My mom has started getting lost and not knowing where she's going.
Becoming lost or disoriented doesn't. Confusion with time or place may be a sign of Alzheimer's. An early diagnosis can help improve the quality of life for your loved one. Learn the warning signs of Alzheimer's at 10signs.org. Brought to you by the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. The Maggie Dawn Show.
One of the most prolific columnists in the Midwest. Mr. James Causey, one of your columns, you mentioned that you got into the news because of the news quiz.
Yes. I would like to be the first person picked. And so.
Yes. Getting picked first for the news quiz teams.
We need to bring that back, actually. I need to talk to my paper about bringing that back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Change starts with you. You can be calling your Democratic or Republican representatives to let them know what you think by calling 202-224-3121. It's the Capitol switchboard. It'll get you right through to them. And welcome back. We're talking with Ali Velshi. His guy, MSNBC's Ali Velshi, has a new book out, Small Acts of Courage, A Legacy of Endurance and the Fight for Democracy. And we were just, Ali and I were just talking about the impact of, or how, you know, the issue of, I suppose, immigration and whatnot. Ali, on page 182, you talk about your parents arriving and starting their travel business in 71 and joining the Liberal Party in Canada in 72, how that worked. And in fact, you go on page 185 about how we don't have, in Canada, we didn't have 50 different election systems, just one. Election periods are proscribed, are short, 6 weeks, tight limits on campaign finance. What can America learn from Canada?
I mean, this was the heart of the book. This is literally what I was trying to explain to people. Voting does not have to be complicated. It just doesn't have to be that complicated. We figured it out in Canada. You are assumed to be registered to vote. You are. You don't have to do it the other way. You don't have to go there. People come to your house to try and find you to make you vote. There's none of this nonsense about it being illegal to help people vote, help people register to vote, give them food if they vote. I mean, when my dad was running elections, we literally fed them coming and going, which is the way it should be. We should be providing every incentive possible to make it easy for people to vote. And again, Tom, voting is the price of admission into a democracy. It's the least of the responsibilities that you have as a citizen. And many of the arguments I make in the book is that there's much more that we can do. If you feel imperiled, which I kind of do, I do think that democracy in America is imperiled and around the world is imperiled, we have agency. We have the ability to actually do that. But that's my belief has always been, let's make it as easy as we can for people to vote. And Canada is a fantastic example of how to do that. I understand everybody wants to do it differently. It's 50 different presidential elections, but we could just employ best practices, right? We could all get together and say, which are the ones that work the best? Which are the ones that really don't? Because it makes it hard for people to turn out and vote. I was in Philadelphia the other night. They had a municipal election. The turnout was 19%. We have a lot of work to do, Tom, when we've got 19% turning out for some elections, especially things like local elections, which really matter to your day-to-day life. So I really want to make it easier to vote, and then I want to make people understand that citizenship is not just a series of rights. It's a series of obligations as well.
I get it. We just have a minute left here before we hit the break at the end of this block. You write on page, 238, the arc of history bends the way you bend it, your earliest impression of America when you were living in Canada and watching American television. And you say, we didn't have guns in Canada, and Toronto's brick houses didn't catch on fire. You want to speak to that?
Yeah, it was funny because we got our American news from Buffalo. You know, most of the Canadian population lives within 200 miles of the U.S. border, so they get American TV. And the lead on the news, the local news every night, was either a fire or some kind of gun battle. And I really grew up thinking America was on fire and everybody was doing battle all the time. Obviously, America is much more sophisticated than that, and I learned that. But that was the distinction. The other thing that really upset me is they ran commercials for Carvel, and there was no Carvel in Canada. So I kind of grew up hating America just a little bit because I could never have that Carvel ice cream.
The ice cream. And then you talk about the movie Gandhi, Martin Sheen, in that he's the guy who inspired you, that character.
That's right. Webb Walker was a real guy. He was a real reporter, and he was there covering Gandhi's salt march to the water. And it was one of those things where it was a pointless march. People were just getting beaten by the soldiers and injured. But he called in a dispatch,
great,
and that made it to the newspapers. And that's how the world saw what was going on. And that, Tom, takes us full circle to the whole point of being a journalist. And that is, we bear witness to show people the things that they cannot see themselves, and then we hold them to account.
There you go. 25. The book is Small Acts of Courage by Ali Velshi. Ali, thanks so much for dropping by today.
Thank you for having me on, my friend.
That's been an honor. Fresh dog food is everywhere right now, but is it the real deal or is it all hype? Well, for me, there are a few issues with it. Number one, it ships frozen, so you have to wait for it to thaw. Number two, you have to store it in the fridge, and once it's defrosted, it can expire pretty quickly. Number three, it's cooked, which can actually destroy a lot of the nutrients your dog needs. And number four, it's messy. You're a busy dog parent. You need a dog food that's great for your pup and easy for you to use. That's why I love feeding my dogs Blue and Chewy Dr. Marty's Nature's Blend. It's ready the moment it's mealtime. It's shelf-stable and dry to the touch, so you don't need to squeeze it from a wet pouch. Plus, unlike most fresh dog food that's cooked with high heat, Nature's Blend is freeze-dried raw, meaning it has an optimum amount of nutrients your dog needs for their health and happiness, and a flavor and texture they'll find irresistible. Save up to 54% off Nature's Blend, plus a free bag of Telly's Treasures, their best-selling beef-flavored dog treats. Just go to drmartypets.com/Tom, T-H-O-M, or text Tom to 511-511. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary. Message and data rates may apply.
Do you love watching television? If you're on a fixed budget, you need to make this free call right now to Dish and find out how you can get a fixed monthly price to watch all the television you want for 3 full years. In addition to a 3-year price guarantee, you can also get free monthly movie rentals. Give you one free movie rental every month. That's a $165 value, yours free. Plus, get free in-home tech visits, no-cost equipment replacements, a free voice remote, and you can watch commercial-free TV. Even access all your favorite apps to stream, like Netflix, Amazon Prime, YouTube, and more. Now is the perfect time to call Dish. Take advantage of the 3-year price guarantee. Save yourself some money, and all your equipment is free. Call right now.
800-478-5560. 800-478-5560. 800-478-5560. That's 800-478-5560. Paid for by NPS.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. On this Memorial Day, commemorations across the country, including one at Veterans Memorial Park in Sanford, Florida, where hundreds honored lost service men and women, including this 13-year-old.
I think it'll, like, help us to be less selfish and to just realize that we don't deserve all of these things. People died so that we're able to have them.
The death toll has risen to 22 after powerful storms swept over the central and southern U.S. this weekend. The next phase of Donald Trump's hush money trial closing arguments, which begin tomorrow. A 26-year-old Massachusetts man who stabbed 6 people, including 4 girls, in a movie theater in separate attacks, will be arraigned tomorrow. He was arrested Saturday night. One half of the NBA playoffs is decided. The Boston Celtics wrapped up the Eastern Conference Finals tonight, beating the Indiana Pacers in Game 4, 105-102. Next up tomorrow, Dallas and Minnesota battling for the Western Conference title. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Cuts are coming to another Wisconsin college. The Turbo University in La Crosse is trying to lower expenses. 27 jobs are going away. The Turbo's president says enrollment is shrinking and the university's deficit is growing. The Biden administration is expanding health coverage to children of immigrants in the DACA program. DACA participants in the U.S. are 3 times more likely than the general population to be uninsured. Aline Yuriko Badillo Carrillo is in the DACA program.
Not just for me, but I think it's a communal benefit. If I have access to medical care, then I'll be able to be healthier, and then I'll be able to help others.
Badillo Carrillo says immigrants and their families work many jobs vital to the economy. This is Civic Media News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Variety has posted the predictions for Emmy Award nominations for Best Supporting Actor in the Comedy category. 8 of the top 10 nominees come from just 3 shows, FX's The Bear, Max's Hacks, and ABC's Abbott Elementary. Representing The Bear are Eben Moss Bachrach, Oliver Platt, Maddie Matheson, and Lionel Boyce. Paul Downs and Carl Clemens Hopkins are from Hacks, and Tyler James Williams and Chris Spaghetti from Abbott Elementary. Richard Lewis is predicted to receive a posthumous nomination for Curb Your Enthusiasm. The title for the latest installment in the Knives Out franchise has been revealed. The Hollywood Reporter sprung the news that Wake Up Dead Man, a Knives Out mystery, will debut on Netflix sometime next year. Director Rian Johnson revealed the title on his ex-Twitter page, as well as the fact that Daniel Craig will be back as the lead in the latest installment of the whodunit franchise. If they keep making Knives Out films, it's going to seem unbelievable that anyone would be seen at a dinner party with Daniel Craig. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Just a few showers around in the overnight, otherwise mostly cloudy skies and light winds. Upper 40s expected by sunrise. We'll have more chances of showers, even some thunderstorms for your Tuesday. Mostly cloudy skies, highs in the middle 60s. It's 53 at our studios.
Earl Ingram.
Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. You say what?
I've been marching since I was 17. I'm 74. And women need to get out. You need to vote because you don't want to go back to 1950 where you weren't allowed a credit card, where you weren't allowed to buy, purchase a car or a home. These are things that are at stake.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
And here's Heather with the weather.
Well, it's beautiful out there, sunny and 75, almost a little chilly in the shade. Now, let's get a read on the inside of your car. It is hot. You've only been parked a short time and it's already 99 degrees in there. Let's not leave children in the back seat while running errands. It only takes a few minutes for their body temperatures to rise, and that could be fatal.
Cars get hot fast and can be deadly. Never leave a child in a car. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
College education, very inexpensively, if not for free. And for here you go to debt. Why is it that we've got our public schools crumbling and other countries are doing well? Why is it that we've got Medicare being taken apart by this Medicare Advantage scam and nobody will do anything about it? Well, it turns out the reason why boils down to one thing, one Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, legalizing the bribery of our politicians. There's a whole rant about this over at HartmanReport.com. I think you're going to find it very, very useful. Check it out. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour, and thank you for hanging on, the folks on the phone line here. That was just an absolutely fascinating conversation with Ali Velshi. The book is remarkable, and I just highly recommend it. Small Acts of Courage. Patty in Newark, New York. Hey, Patty, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. I'm so glad to get a chance to talk with you. I tell you, I got to climb up your hiney for just a second here and let you know we love your honesty and your outspokenness in this area. There's a lot of Republicans around here, and I'm surrounded by them, but we love the fact. You said earlier about Trump, they found out in court today that he was running his personal businesses out of the White House. Signing checks, doing all these things. And then matter of factly, you just said he's a freaking one-man crime wave. And I'm telling you, that's a fact. You were right on point, sir.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure. I think I said that it was a crime, and I'm not sure that that's actually the case. Although...
Well, he is a one-man freaking crime show.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Absolutely.
Yes.
I do think that by running his businesses, who were involved in taking money from foreign governments, and you had the Saudis, you had Russians, you had multiple people from other countries that wanted things from Trump, who were booking like literally entire floors of his hotel and then never even showing up and using the rooms. These were just clearly, in my opinion, bribes to him. I think, the crime part of that is that these are violations of the Emoluments Clause, which is part of the Constitution, which is, the supreme criminal law of our land, the supreme law of our land. And so I think you could build a case that it was criminal what he did.
But wasn't he also renting these rooms at crazy amounts to our own FBI to protect him?
That's right. And the Secret Service. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you mean, Secret Service, yes. Yeah, I mean, my God. But you're saying he's a freaking one-man crime wave. Do you mind if I put that on tribal? Because I know you're on tribal.
Yes, I am. Yeah, please. Feel free. I don't think it's unique to me. I probably read it someplace else. Patty, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. It's so nice to hear from you. Carol in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Hey, Carol, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. What's up?
Well, I want to have a shout out to, it says behind every successful man is a successful woman.
Oh,
so
yeah.
To Louise.
Indeed.
And also Mark, you're one of your, I know Mark's not a woman, Mark, but thank you.
Yeah, Mark.
Hey, I want to ask you a real quick, I have two things, very important. One, could you give me an update, those two Biden appointees for the post office? Where are they now, and what's going on with the post office? That's the first one.
I don't know, Carol. I'm sorry. I believe that they're before the Senate. It would be a question to ask Chuck Schumer, I believe, but I just don't know.
Begin with an update on that, too. And then the other one, I don't know if you could get him on the show, but all these polls that are fake polls that CNN and these other right-wing people are quoting, and they are really fake polls. The guy to ask, if you recall, at the January 6th committee, they had him testify that long before the election took place, he knew from the polls, all suggested that Trump was going to lose. Well, he knew it. And I don't recall that guy's name that testified in front of the committee, but we need to get him on the show to set people straight, because I'll bet you he knows what's going on right now.
Yeah, the guy I want to get on is Simon Rosenberg. Sean has apparently reached out to him a couple of times, and we're, you know, because he publishes this thing called Hopium Chronicles over on Substack, and it's just brilliant. We'll get into that more in the future. Carol,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay, have the weekend.
Yeah, thank you. You too. Have a great weekend. Brandon in San Jose. Hey, Brandon, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hey. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
So I wanted to bring up, it's not kind of related to the Louisiana governor thing, but I wanted to bring up the subject of race relations, in America.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's this old saying that the more things change, the more they stay the same. And it's certainly been true in the South, especially in the Appalachian South. I've been rereading lately Huck Finn. And there's been a few things that have been striking me about it. Beyond the sheer brutality of the book, that you don't. I guess I'm surprised that they assigned this book to children, or at least teenage children, considering how heavy the themes are. Another thing, obviously, is that the main character is friends with the slave.
Yeah, I have to admit, I never read Huckleberry Finn. I'm sorry, Brandon.
So, sure. Well, I guess
I'm broadly familiar with it. I mean, or loosely familiar with it, but I never read the book.
Sure. Well, I guess the point that I'm trying to get to is that it's kind of amazing how little things have changed, especially in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to inquire about is what did we do wrong after the Civil War? What should we have done?
Right.
Here's
my understanding of that era's history, and it's probably incomplete, and I'm certainly no scholar of that time. I know a lot more about the Revolutionary era than I do the post-Civil War era. But basically, coming out of the Civil War, you had on the one hand, you had a president, Andrew Johnson, who was Lincoln's vice president. He was Lincoln's second vice president. And for his second term, Lincoln wanted to try to heal America. So he brought in a Southerner, Andrew Johnson, who was also a slave owner. So you had a Southerner slave owner who ended up inheriting the White House, essentially, who was no friend to Reconstruction, to giving the vote to black people, to Lincoln's promise of 40 acres and a mule and all those kind of things. And there was that. But on the other hand, once Johnson was out of there, I mean, Congress was horrified by this. And you had this faction called the Radical Republicans that was led by this guy named Thaddeus Stevens, a member of Congress. And they were, you know, gung-ho to fully integrate America, do it now, do it tomorrow, make it happen. And in fact, you had, I believe it was South Carolina, might have been North Carolina, I'm pretty sure it was South Carolina. Yeah, actually, there was a majority black legislature, for a couple of years there. So we were moving in the right direction, and we were moving in that direction fairly rapidly, Andrew Johnson notwithstanding. And then we got President Ulysses S. Grant, who was a friend of the Radical Republicans and agreed with this and continued that process. And then after Grant's presidency, that brings us to the election of 1876. And in 1876, Sam Tilden, who was a Democrat, and at that time the Democrats were the party of slavery, Sam Tilden actually won, and most of the states had been essentially reintegrated, which is how Sam Tilden was able to win. He won the Electoral College vote, and he won the national vote. But Congress didn't want to seat him. And because right. he was a Southerner, and he was, he would have tried to end Reconstruction. So the deal that was cut, and there was this controversy because there were three states. One of them was Oregon. Here, Oregon had been taken over by the Ku Klux Klan, and then two of the southern states, and I believe it was Georgia and Florida. Might have been Georgia and Alabama. I'd have to look it up. I've written about it, but I don't recall there were three states where the states submitted dueling slates of electors, just like Trump tried to do. They claimed that Tilden won, and then they claimed that Hayes had won. And because of that, because you had three states that had these dueling slates of electors, none of those electors got counted, and therefore the threshold for the Electoral College never got hit. Right now the threshold is 270 votes, or 270 Electoral College votes. Back then, I don't know what the number was, but it didn't get hit. And as a result, under the 12th Amendment, the election got thrown to the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives then created this committee that worked out this deal where they put Rutherford B. Hayes, the Republican, into office in exchange, this is the deal they made with the Democrats, the Southern Democrats, in exchange for ending Reconstruction. And basically throwing black people in America back into second-class status. And then that second-class status got ratified by the Supreme Court in 1898 in the decision, I'm forgetting the name of the decision, but it basically was the separate, Plessy versus Ferguson. It was separate but equal. That segregation was acceptable in the United States because segregation was reestablished in 1877. So that's what we got wrong, in my opinion, Brandon, was the South wasn't crushed, and they weren't crushed, after the Civil War, or at least the racist movement in the South was not crushed, in large part because Abraham Lincoln was dead and Andrew Johnson was president. And Ulysses Grant, who had fought the Civil War against the South, was also enamored of this idea of healing America and bringing us together, although he was, moving the country in the right direction very, very quickly. But then when Hayes came in, that was the deal where African Americans were stabbed in the back, black people were stabbed in the back by the white power structure. And, that led to, like in 1960, by 1965, 1964, when the Civil Rights Act was passed, 1965, the Voting Rights Act, only 7% of blacks in Louisiana were registered to vote. It was like 8 or 9% in Alabama, as I recall. The numbers are in one of my books. And it was because of that whole, Plessy versus Ferguson decision and the Supreme Court basically backing up the white racists in the South and allowing them to prevent people from voting. So, right. I think the big thing that really destroyed it was the death of Lincoln, actually. Lincoln, earlier in his career, had been, I'm okay with, blacks having second-class status. But by the middle of the Civil War, he had completely changed his mind, and he had kind of helped give birth to the radical Republican movement. If my recollection or understanding of the history of that time is accurate. And I welcome any Civil War historians to correct me on any of my details. Sure. But I think that's, in broad measure what happened. Does that make sense, Brandon?
Yeah, well, it's disheartening that we're still here in many ways.
We still are. The lost cause never died. Brandon, thank you for the call. Yeah. It's 48 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Right back with more of your calls in just a moment. Stay tuned. Hey, Tom Harbin here. Why sign up for my program's free daily newsletter over at tom.tv? Well, every morning you receive an email with a complete list of the topics we'll be covering on our weekday program. After the show's over, every afternoon, you'll get what I call Sue's Daily Stack that gives you hot links to every single story and information source that we talked about during the show. Plus, every day while the show is live, you can watch it at tom.tv without cost. That podcast of the show, a complete library of every subject discussed on previous shows, a place to view it live, it's all at tom.tv. So why sign up to get all this at no cost? Because we want you to join us to help change the world for the better. Despair is not an option. Sign up now at tom.tv. That's T-H-O-M.tv to get all the ammunition you need to win the water cooler wars. Tom.tv. Tag, you're it.
Well, hi there. It's the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke bringing you the Midwest Farm Report live weekday mornings right here on WBZH. It's not just for farmers. It's for anybody that loves food. Tune in 5 a.m. on the Buzz of the North, 910 a.m. Hayward.
All across Wisconsin, destination marketing organizations are working to ensure that tourism in our state and your local community is stronger than ever. Their work to drive visitation and enhance the visitor experience not only encourages travelers to discover our great state, it bolsters the economy, supports jobs, and it improves the quality of life for all Wisconsin residents. To learn more about what these great organizations are doing, visit DestinationsWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Destinations Wisconsin.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. I get questions sometimes from folks about whether or not people should buy silver or gold. You know, the actual physical metal itself. Should people buy it, put it in a safe, or bury it in their backyard or something? And I get it. There's something to the allure of a precious metal. You know, gold is tangible. You can hold it in your hands. It's pretty. Gold used to prop up the value of the U.S. dollar. It's been about 50 years since that was the case. But some people feel like buying gold or silver can be a safeguard for their money in uncertain times. Feelings are one thing, and math is something different. And in this case, the math is very clear. A diversified, low-risk portfolio beats a hidey hole full of gold every time. For more insights on how money works, how you can save more and spend less, head on over to workmoney.org. Until next time, this is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
One of the most prolific columnists in the Midwest, Mr. James Causey. One of your columns, you mentioned that you got into the news because of the news quiz.
Yes. I would like to be the first person picked. And so.
Yes. Getting picked first for the news quiz teams.
We need to bring that back, actually. I need to talk to my paper about bringing that back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Help support Progressive Radio. If you're listening to us on a commercial station, call their advertisers and let them know you're listening. If you're listening to us on Pacifica, one of our many nonprofit stations, please support them when they do their fundraising drives. Thanks for supporting Progressive Talk Radio and tag you're it. 8 minutes before the hour, picking up your calls here, Will in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Will, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing this morning? I want to talk a little bit about race. You know, I'll be right out. I'm on the phone. And what I wanted to say is, why is it, this is the Tom Harbin show I'm talking to. I want to know, why is it that every time you see a black man, that now on TV or any of these shows, movies or whatever, he always either got to be a criminal or he has to be gay. Now, I just wanted to speak on that, because all of us men, You see what I'm saying? It's not that we alienating anybody, but it's like they want to show us. And then when they do the talk shows, they get these gatekeepers on here that want to speak, that want to, what you say, speak truth to power. For instance, you just were speaking on the horoscopes. I mean, you know, the elements, the sky, you know what I'm saying, the solar system. But you didn't mention the Dogon tribe, you know, when they were, you know, when they go back, I mean, way beyond, you see what I'm saying, of Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
you know,
my friend Steve Larson wrote a book about them.
Yeah, you see, and so this is, you know, and then, you know, as far as black people, I just wanted to get onto this. Is for being black, you can't be anti-Semitic because that's the area that you come from, that most black people come from in Africa before the, how would I say, the, I don't want to call it immigrants, but the new variety of people, Jews, came down here. You see what I'm saying? And then when we talk about some of these subjects, we don't talk, when we talk about racism, you know, for instance, I stay here in Buffalo. I was 10 minutes away from. About the fact, I had just left out of the Tops when this racist came and shot those 10 people. When I got to the house, I do a lot of community work. When I got to the house, I got the call, so I had to come back down there.
Yeah, you know, that was in your
but
town.
Then you know, people. Yeah, you know, so I'm still thinking about what's going on here. I have a city that now we have an influx of immigrants coming here, and some of them moved from Detroit, some of them moved from New York and all. They came in here 5 years ago, right? They bought up all the stores, right? After they bought up all the stores in our area, did something similar with the Jews did in the 60s, right, in the 50s. Now, I don't mind them coming in, but they don't hire none of us. The point I'm trying to make is right after they did all that, 6 months ago in Buffalo, we got on the news, oh, yeah, all these banks didn't redline black folks from getting businesses and jobs and everything else, or businesses and loans, you know, for the last 5-6 years. You see what I'm saying? The games they play at us. But they act like being Democrats. We have to sit back here. And
so, Will, what should we do about this?
You know, what I'm saying is that we need to work together. For instance, you know, here they are protesting, you know, about all this stuff going on over, you know, in overseas, these wars. But they're not protesting about Africa. They're not protesting about the books. You see what I'm saying? Them trying to take our history away. But most of them people that's trying to do, they immigrants themselves. We were here way before them. You know, by the fact, way before the Mayflower. Mm-hmm. You know, and so people are not talking about this. But you'll go protest against this. But when it comes to us, you know, nobody posted. They're protesting. As a matter of fact, they still sending my tax money, you understand, to Texas. They still sending my tax money to Florida. They still sending it to Arizona. Why doesn't people say, well, you know, some since you don't want to teach our history on this, we want to take the tax money y'all get from the federal government, from you guys, since we can't play a part in that. Nobody's talking about these things. Because you get these gatekeepers on these talk shows that want to be, how would I say, peaceful. They want to, you know, get along with everybody and tell them the truth. Some of the things that the Democrats are doing, I just totally disagree with. Now, I am a Democrat, and I am going to vote Democrat this year. But they need to know everybody don't think the same way as Democrats. And they have people out here thinking all of us think the same. And it's wrong. That's
it,
all
well.
I'm
saying. Well, I'm out of time. I'm sorry. But thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to SiriusXM. And, we'll be back on the other side of this break with Joy Reid. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Why do so many dogs suffer from weight issues, skin problems, messy poops, and low energy? It could be the popular dog food you put in their bowl each day.
Cody was sleeping a lot, wasn't playing.
She was very lethargic and not moving around.
Dry kibble just wasn't cutting it.
That's why, after more than 45 years of experience of helping dogs make complete health turnarounds, veterinarian Dr. Marty created Nature's Blend. It's a freeze-dried raw dog food made with wholesome ingredients like premium meats, seeds, vegetables, and fruit. And once dog parents switch their pups to Nature's Blend, the results can be astounding.
She's got her energy back. She's running around like she did like 5 years ago.
Miraculously, she's just feeling all around better. She's like a new dog. Thank you, Dr. Marty.
Get your dog started today and save up to 54% off Nature's Blend. Plus, receive a free pack of our best-selling beef liver dog treats. Go to drmartypets.com/Tom. Text Tom to 511-511. Text THOM to 511-511. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary. Message and data rates may apply.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
One, two, three.
What you doing?
Four, five, six. Counting the first place awards from the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association.
WISS in Oshkosh for the best promo. WAUK in Waukesha, best Maggie Dawn Show web story. WMDX in Madison, best web story about the Max Sync radio show. And WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids for best show, interview, and promo.
Informed, entertained, connected.
And winning.
Your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Launch failure in North Korea. ABC's Dave Packer with the story.
Kim Jong-un's attempt to put a second spy satellite into orbit has failed. North Korean state media blaming an engine problem for the explosion of the rocket carrying the satellite after liftoff. Pyongyang only gave warning of the launch several hours in advance. Japan, observing the launch, said the North Korean rocket exploded over the Yellow Sea. The United States State Department condemning the launch, saying it took place in violation of multiple UN Security Council